Good morning, everyone. Time now for the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Thank you, Mayor, very much for joining us today. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news, but if you want to jot that phone number down now, it's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guest today. Our guest today, it is the second Tuesday of the month, city staff, Grant Spass city staff in, well, not the whole staff. Important part of the staff is city manager Aaron Kubik and community development director Brad Clark are in studio with us. Gentlemen, welcome. Glad to have you with us here on this beautiful summer day here.
Oh, man, it's gorgeous. What a great time of year. I mean, last night was so cool. It was nice having the windows open.
Had the window open again, yeah.
Yeah, very nice.
All right. If the smoke stays away and it looks pretty clear right now, we'll have a great day.
Yeah, I've been tracking the smoke, trying to look at places to go around the state, and it's nice and clear here, but definitely not in the Bend area.
No, don't want to stay out of there.
No.
All right. Aaron, while you have the microphone on right there right now, of course, ongoing question here, what is the situation with the Ninth Circuit Court? Do we anticipate the injunction being lifted soon?
We do. And I don't have a date for it.
And you don't have a date for it. Do we know the holdup here? Do they have to reconsider it or put other stipulations on it? Do we have any idea what's going on with it?
It's just a process. We were told right from the get-go that it would be 60 to 90 days. And so we're getting closer to the 60-ish type of days, 45, 60 days. So we anticipate that it'll come out pretty soon, that'll be lifted. And then we'll be able to fully engage our codes that were adopted last week by city council.
Oh, all right. And kudos to the council there. Certainly moving ahead in the situation. I think some people were disappointed that it wasn't completely taken out of Riverside Park. Have you had any feedback on that?
Well, the feedback from the public definitely was that they were concerned about the East Park location and the Riverside West location, and that they, at least in the public meetings, they expressed a desire to not have those as chosen sites. The four sites that we've identified are all temporary in nature. And the reason why how we set up the program is we set up the code itself by ordinance, which you have to do. Ordinances are more formal in nature, and they require a first and a second reading, and an ordinance is a strong document that guides us.
It's the law.
Then we adopt resolutions, which aren't as strong and they're a little more flexible. And the resolution is, and how we set that up is we set up here's what we're expecting, where you can rest, where you can establish camping material. And then we will identify those sites by resolution. We did that because resolutions are easier to change. And we know that those four sites that we've chosen are temporary in nature. So I would not be surprised if any time in the next few months to year, we may have other sites identified, or we may, because we're going to be tracking all of the data, all of it. We're taking in all the data that we can. So we'll be tracking the success of all those sites. We'll be tracking the use of those sites. And based on that, we'll know if we're hitting the mark or not on the needs for an individual to be able to rest in the community.
All right. I know that we deal with this every time, but that's top of the mind awareness for most of the public out there. So we had to ask that particular question. In the meantime, you brought the community development director with you.
Yes.
Why'd you bring him again? I apologize,
Brad.
Good
to see you too, Jeff.
Well, you know, we sit around I have a great group of colleagues that, and one of those teams that I work with is X Team. I call them the X Team because they're superheroes. And, you know, we sit around and we have a lot of discussions. We meet weekly and you know, I had eight straws, and all of different sizes.
He got the short one.
And I said, all right, let's draw straws. And the short straw wins and gets to come with the city manager to talk on the radio show. And guess who drew the short straw?
Oh, Brad, welcome here. I know you've got broad enough shoulders to take a little ribbing here. We have to have a little fun and smile every now and then.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
So what's coming across your desk these days? What are you really dealing with there?
Well, CD, community development, we've got our fingers in all kinds of things, as you know. One of the topics that, of course, is hot across the entire nation, I think we've probably talked more than any other topic when I've come onto your show, is housing. We can talk a little bit about that today, but what what it led me to when I was thinking about today was the impression that I think folks have that the city builds things, or that the city, you know, is the primary implementer of projects. And it led me to the thought about partnerships and how we are partnering with lots and lots of different organizations, both private sector, nonprofit, you know, other agencies. And so we've had a lot of success at the City of Grants Pass with building those partnerships long before I came on, of course. But so anyway, I think that, you know, one of those relates to the housing field, of course. One of the assets that the city does have and has brought to the housing crisis is land. Because housing, you know, needs land, you need labor, you know, you need lending, and you have local regulations. A lot of times people talk about those four L's, you know, when it comes to housing. And land is a big one, and it comes up all the time, and particularly in Oregon, in our system here in the state where, you know, we have urban growth boundaries and a lot of discussion and debate, and academics talk about, well, what are the impacts of urban growth boundaries on housing price and land. And so all that set up to basically say, one of the things that I think this council has been successful in is using land, which is one of the assets that the city has, in building partnerships. Two examples come to mind. One is off Allenwood and Williams Highway. There's about a 9-acre piece there that the city's had since 2005 that was put out for a request for interest to see who might be interested in developing it. We went through a long process several months ago and ended up identifying a couple of partners who want to build between 80 and 130 houses there. So, you know, that's something. We're still going to use that property to provide some open space and some public park. But because of our dire need for housing in this community, you know, the council chose to designate some of that 9 acres for housing as well. So that's an exciting example we're moving forward on. Another very small example, the city's had for a long time, a small little piece of land on 8th Street. It actually only happens to be 20 feet wide. There was a lot of thought, well, what are we going to do with that? So it got sold, and right now there's, you know, there's a fourplex being built on it and by a private for market rate housing. So anyway, I think those are just two examples of, you know, how the city is involved with thinking, okay, what do we have that we can bring to the table, and how can we best match up our resources to help bring, you know, some success here to the community.
All right. Public-private partnerships, certainly a great idea, but let's go back to the Allen Creek. You identified that property in 2005, and it's still not developed almost 20 years later. I know the wheels of government turn very, very slowly, but that's sure. Pretty slow. What do we need to do to incentivize more of those partnerships?
Yeah. Well, of course, when that property was purchased, the vision for it was as a public park. It was park reserve, and it's still functioning, you know, that way today, because, you know, that housing project is still very much preliminary. But and you're right, when it comes to particularly developing a public park, you know, that does take time, and it takes a lot of money to put in the irrigation, to put in the parking, you know, to buy the trees, to put in the playground equipment, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the city, you know, just hadn't got to that point of being ready to put the money in there. So this was an alternative use that just recently came up in the last, you know, a year and a half or two.
All right. Well, do we have a time frame on when we'll see shovels in the ground out there?
On that one, the rezoning process is underway. We're working with a surveyor now on getting the property surveyed and getting the property line adjustment done. There's not a hard date on it, but the developer has got their funding package is being developed now.
All right, so it's not a done deal yet, but pretty close.
Correct.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that one. Talking about land, just if you look at the topography of the Grants Pass area in Josephine County, it would appear that we're pretty well landlocked, and here, and land is at a premium. We don't have much of it, but every time I talk to you, I find out we've got more than we really thought we had at first glance. So what's available out there?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a good point. We look up from pretty much any location within the city, and you see the hills. But we're multiple square miles in the city limits, and in the urban growth boundary. You know, another about 1,400 acres was added in 2014. If you're talking about if you come from the Midwest or other South or other parts of the country. Where people talk about land development, Arizona is another good one. Sometimes the first image that comes to mind are, 100, 200, 300 acre subdivisions, planned communities. There's other names for them with all the amenities and the golf courses. And well, that takes a lot of flat open land.
We don't have a lot of flat open land.
So you definitely have to rethink it. When you're thinking about available, developable land in Grants Pass, and tend to think maybe start around the 5-acre mark in terms of what is considered a large, vacant, developable parcel here. Very, very different than what you see, and even other parts of Oregon, so they're scattered around. The city council is right now looking at infill, what we call infill development opportunities, to look at those parcels and that have not developed or have very little on them, and what can we do to help incentivize those. And I think that's one opportunity to get more development, is to look at that. But there's also other pieces in the Redwood District that are reasonably flat and open and available, particularly in the urban growth boundary.
So, right. What steps is council taking or considering taking, or what are you recommending to council in order to incentivize those public-private partnerships to get those small parcels of land developable, profitable for a contractor?
Right. So the Housing Advisory Committee has had this very discussion a couple of times, and is getting some recommendations together that will go to council. So at this point, there are things like, reducing the setbacks, or allowing for maybe a little bit more height, or reducing some of the system development charges and replenishing those with maybe another fund, or increased timeline, or decreasing the timeline, for permitting. Some of those typical things that government has in its toolbox.
All right. What can we do to speed up that process? I guess it goes to your department. I guess we're talking about efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we've talked on the show, I think, before about, Grants Pass compared to a lot of our comparators around the state is right at the top in terms of time frame to get permits through the process. On the residential side, we have set for ourselves that target of 10 days, and on the commercial side, 20 days. So,
that's pretty quick.
Efficiency, that's a pretty quick turnaround compared to sometimes 6 months for a single family permit in parts of California and Washington State and other adjacent states. So I think we pride ourselves on the timing. Can we become more efficient in other ways? Of course, there's always opportunities there. Technology, of course, is a big one, and we are always looking for
ways to streamline using technology. And we did introduce a new permitting system just about a year and a half ago that is online. And so you don't even have to come into the office now. You can just do your entire permit from your house if you want to. So things like that that we're working on. And then, of course, working with other state agencies and reviewers on the fire side and on the transportation side to stay in really good communication so that when it comes down to a permit, we have those relationships in place and we can, we can help become more efficient with those partner agency reviews.
Grease the wheels, as it may be.
There you go.
Okay, all right. We're going to continue here. We've got Brad Clark, Community Development Director, and City Manager Aaron Kubik in studio. We'll be right back.
Diamond.
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. We have City Manager Aaron Kubik and Community Development Director Brad Clark in studio talking about land development and housing development and ways to attack the housing market here in Grants Pass, which has been certainly challenged. A vacancy rate is what, 99% vacancy? That you can't find a place to buy or rent because everybody's hanging on to it right now. And we're talking about some of the steps that the Community Development Department can do to encourage that. And I'm assuming that you've reached out to other potential partners, Brad. What are you hearing from them? What do they want you to do that is impossible?
Are you saying partners as in
public
development partners?
Yeah, development partners, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you're a developer, the most common two things we hear is time and money, predictability. I guess that would be another big one. The development community is most happy when they know exactly what the rules are and they know those rules aren't going to change. And when they come in, they're not going to be surprised by any sort of new interpretation or new rule change. It's predictable because they have already at that point, spent a lot of time and a lot of money preparing plans, working with engineers, working with architects to even get to the point of coming to the city. And so if you've already put out thousands of dollars and then suddenly you get a curveball thrown at you, that's not a good thing. So we hear that, and that piece, has presented some challenges for us over the last 2 years because of the state's middle housing code, and that is a pretty seismic shift in terms of how the state of Oregon and how cities in the state of Oregon do development. And the state legislature put out this set of rules, and they had it reasonably thought out, but there was a whole lot of uncertainty about some of the specifics, how it was going to actually play out on the ground. And so that has presented some challenges. I think we're doing pretty well at working with the development community through that process. That's one. We also hear that they, that about typically between 20 and 26% of new housing, if you look at national figures, the cost of that is tied to regulation. And so what are the ways that, that number can be brought down so that the cost of housing can be brought down as well? That's involving federal rules and state rules and local rules. So, we at sort of that bottom rung of government can only do so much.
I was going to say your hands are tied for much of it, I would imagine, yeah. Tied to interest rates and all the rules that both the feds and the state come down with.
Right.
All right. Do we have a lobbying situation where we could affect certainly what goes on in the state? What are you hearing from the state? Do you work with our state legislators?
Well, and Aaron could probably speak to this as well, but the League of Oregon Cities is who we most often use as far as our avenue to legislation, and so we're often have our ear to the ground in terms of what are some of the committees and legislators thinking about for the 2025 session. Infrastructure is one of those, and so. to your question, are there opportunities that we have to influence? Certainly, you know, I mean, sort of learning about what bills they are expecting to come before the legislature, and then having those conversations early. You know, that's super important, so that you know, particularly in short sessions, but when so you can have those packages put together and a lot of those issues worked out before it actually gets there. So funding new sewer, new water, new storm water, et cetera, it's all very expensive and almost always needs, again, partnerships to help fund those that infrastructure, which is what's necessary in the city to get new development.
All right. So what I'm hearing is that 25% of the cost of a new house is generated by government rules.
That is a national figure that's been studied for many years. That's what we hear, yeah.
How many years? I mean, how long has this been known that that's the situation, or is it just not coming to bear with what's happening both locally and nationally?
Well, I mean, I think like the National Association of Home Builders and, you know, the Realtors Association, I mean, other national groups have done a lot of work to try to bring it to the attention at the national level, you know, and there have been some efforts to at zoning reform. You know, zoning is one of those things that is almost 100% local, but you have seen various U.S. Congress and presidential commissions over the last 10, 12 years that, you know, have looked at it and said, well, hey, we need to streamline and reduce some of these regulations. But, you know, again, a lot of it really comes down to working and understanding what exactly are those needs and see what changes we can make. And the city council has every other month meets with our local Josephine Home Builders Association to talk about those very issues.
Well, it's certainly a situation that needs to be dealt with. Renters and first-time home buyers are just really up against a wall right now in terms of finding that American dream. At any rate, we're almost out of time here for the first half of the show, so we'll invite you to stay tuned. We'll be back right after the news, and we'll take your phone calls.
Wildfire Affordability.
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress, ladies and gentlemen. The phone lines are open. If you have a question or comment for our guest today, the number to call, 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. So if you have questions or comments for today, City Manager Aaron Kubik is in studio. Community Development Director Brad Clark is in studio. And gentlemen, once again, welcome. We appreciate your presence here once a month here on KJO Radio. Glad to have you with us. And Aaron, you've been pretty quiet for the first half.
I have been. Yeah.
We didn't mean to wake you up here.
My mic's on, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
Just don't lean on the cough button.
All right. Yeah.
But we've been putting Brad Clark up pretty well on the spot today, talking about community development and housing and land availability. And what else does your department deal with, Brad? What do you deal with on a daily basis? Is that primarily it, trying to find those public-private partnerships that will get some land developed here and some housing available?
It's a big part. Economic development is almost 100% about partnerships. City of Grants Pass is one of the only communities in all of Southern Oregon that has an economic development manager, and you know, we put Dana to work, and a lot of what she and James do is get out there into the community, talk with the business owners, talk with potential business owners, what do they need to be successful? And so, you know, one of those things is, you know, having the opportunity to for job training. I mean, that's a big one. So that partnership with RCC comes into play. The Small Business Development Center is one of the main players here in Josephine County that works, you know, with entrepreneurs and helping them to figure out what do they need. You know, the city for many years has offered, you know, small grants. These aren't significant that are going to completely change the face of a new business, but they can help with sort of targeted things like job training, or like, you know, putting a new awning on the front of your building, or you know, other types of infrastructure improvements, sprinklers in your building if you're wanting to, you know, make it more safe. So those are some of the things that the city has done on in terms of partnerships on the economic development side. And another big one, of course, that we're getting ready to kind of wrap up is the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, which we talked about during COVID years here on your show. You know, there was over $9 million of ARPA money that the city received that all has to be designated and committed by the end of this year. And so, you know, thinking about partnerships and, you know, economic development, that's another big one. So in terms of how we're allocating those, we issued 4 grants for parklets downtown using ARPA money and helping those 4 businesses design and get some new parklets. Maybe you saw or sat behind one of those this season. There was a couple of new ones this year. So that, again, was...
Yeah, and they're most attractive, too, yeah.
Yeah, 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 getting some local artists.
Yeah, they're not just the stone barriers anymore.
Right, which we heard were not the most popular. So, our other ARPA money has you know, gone out to things like Mint helping with their shelter. You know, we've had Fruitdale Home Bridging is a nonprofit here in town. They have received some ARPA money to help with some cottage developments. The Housing Authority of Jackson County received a substantial amount of that ARPA money to assist with Allen Creek Crossing, which is about 60 units of housing there on the corner of Harbeck and Allen Creek Road. And so, you know, there's that side of, again, the partnerships theme today that we're engaged in. And of course, the other piece of community development is parks. And that's our largest division. Josh Hopkins is our park superintendent. And, you know, so that is significant. We're just wrapping up movies in the park. We had one a couple weeks ago. We got another one coming up this week. You know, and working with community to have some fun in the parks, because they've got a lot of tough issues that they've been dealing with, as this community well knows. So, you know, we try to introduce some good things. So movies in the parks coming up later this week.
And I should know right off the top of my head what that movie is, but for the life of me, it leaves me. I'll tell you in about 30 minutes. At any rate, you talked about economic development. Have we targeted any outside development that could come into Grants Pass, and what do we need to do to incentivize that? Is there a target out there to bring in fresh jobs and fresh industry?
So the city, you know, hasn't identified just, for example, one specific industry. I mean, manufacturing, of course, when you're talking about economic development as a generator of jobs, those in the field do tend to focus on manufacturing. That could be small manufacturing. It doesn't have to be your large scale. It
doesn't have to be the large industrial plant with smoke pouring out of the stacks, no.
Right. Basically, any business that is taking some kind of, you know, either a raw product, raw material, and taking that and doing something with it, converting it, and making it into something useful. That could be, you know, we have several food, you know, manufacturers here. So that industry as a general whole is one that we'd like to focus on, just because they tend to have higher wages. They tend to offer benefits, and so those are the kinds of jobs that, you know, a strong community likes to have and develop. They, you know, those ripple out through the community with retail. It doesn't mean that retail sector isn't one of the things we think about, but in terms of where we want to incentivize, it generally falls into that. You know, the manufacturer, so sometimes called traded sector jobs. And the Southern Oregon Economic Development, Inc., SoReady, is kind of the lead agency in that realm. They're based in Medford, but you know, they work in Josephine County as well.
Right, and they, well, they receive funds out of Josephine County too. Well, certainly from the city.
Correct.
All right. So, are there obstacles to overcome to attracting more economic development here besides housing?
Well, that is a big one. You know, on the manufacturing side, the Spalding Industrial Park out there off of Agnes and Spalding and Industry Way, you know, has been in conversation, as you know probably better than I, a long time. One of the challenges there is going back to infrastructure. So that is something that our Public Works Department and Jason and his team are looking at a new sewer main to open up some of the land there. And if we can get that job through, that's going to be big, because it will help demonstrate to the private sector that we have sewer ready, we have water ready, and the land can be developed, so they don't have to face that obstacle.
Well, all it takes is money. All right, so where's the money?
Yeah.
And we know that's a key here. You mentioned the ARPA funds, and I know $6 million has kind of been earmarked for the caveman pool. Is there any ARPA money outside of that? You said there were $9 million total, about $6 million kind of designated for the caveman pool right now, just earmarked. I don't know whether that's inked in yet, but and you mentioned some other smaller areas. Is there any ARPA money left?
Yeah, well, for caveman pool, it's $1.2 million of ARPA is designated for the pool.
Oh, I was under the impression it was more than that.
So, and then there's $5 million of urban renewal agency.
Ah, okay, that's so, where I got the $6 million.
Yeah, that's where you're getting the six, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So ARPA funds, and it all has to be designated by the end of this year. Is there any left, and how do I get some of it if there is?
You want to handle that one, Aaron?
We actually, looking at all of the categories that we have that Council has identified as top priorities associated with the spirit of distribution of dollars for ARPA, we are almost there. One of the biggest ones was the pool and whether or not we were going to do the pool and to what level. Council has provided direction that we are going to do a remodel of the pool, and we will be utilizing the $1.1 million for that. So there's only a little bit here and there in some of the categories that we have left over. Say, for instance, the parklet program. We have maybe $20,000 left in that. We have some miscellaneous little funds here and there in about the seven categories that we've identified. When it's all said and done, we will see if we can't spend those out in those designated categories. If not, we always have a go to where we can identify any remaining dollars to go to the funding of the water treatment plant, which is an allowable use.
Oh, all right. Well, all right. Good news then. So we're going to spend it all.
We will spend it all. We will not be returning any of those dollars.
All right. Well, all right. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio, just flipping right by over three quarters of the program gone. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back after this word.
In partnership with Linux.
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress right now. We have a caller standing by. Good morning. You're on the air. You have a question or comment for our guest this morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I do have a couple of items here. And first of all, it's regarding the budgeting of the Public Safety Department. And according to the source of propertyclub.nyc, the top five cities in Oregon with the most crime is Ontario, Portland, Roseburg, Coos Bay, and Medford. Grants Pass is listed 11th. Based on staffing for public safety, which includes patrol, detectives, administration, and office, does more police stop crime in cities? In similar cities with populations, Grants Pass's ratio per capita is 1.48. Albany, with a population of 54,000, is 1.15. Corvallis, 1.05 with 60,000 residents. Newburg at 1.28. McMinnville with 35,000 at 1.23. Medford with 85,000 at 1.25. Why would you advocate with council for a plea for additional tax on utilities or a tax on food and beverage businesses and not have the public safety department sharpen their budget? That's my first question.
All right. Aaron, you want to step into that one?
Sure. So the city has sharpened their budget over a number of years. Over the past 3 years, we did end up cutting almost $4 million out of general fund resources. The primary brunt of that went towards police and fire services, with police taking a larger cut on that end. The data that you provided, I appreciate that. That data sounds about correct from what my knowledge is of the different costs that are out there. It's extremely hard to match communities with communities because each community has a different level of service that they've identified that they desire. And also the communities are a little bit different. You take McMinnville or you take Medford, you take other communities that have partnering agencies associated with them also, and you can play off of each other when it comes to resources. The City of Grants Pass is the only organization in the county that has 24-hour police protection. And some of those other communities that you're talking about have a stronger support from some of their partnering agencies, which we could play off of each other from that perspective. Same thing with fire is we're limited on what we have for mutual aid agreements. We've got Rural Metro, but we also have really a fire department that is out there working really hard for our constituents with limited partnering resources. So it all pertains to the level of service that's out there. It pertains to what their permanent property tax rate is. It pertains to what the community's true makeup is when it comes to both an internal and external environment. We have police officers that come from the Portland metro area, and they come down and they are hired for Grants Pass Police Department. And we've heard more than one individual say, "I am busier here than I was in Portland. There is so much work to do here. We literally have a lot going on." And you know, the chief of police and I have talked. We talk on the X team. It's absolutely amazing the level of items that we have that our public safety department, police, and fire have to respond to for a community our size. I think some people may be unaware of what the level of service that we're actually needing to provide in order to keep our community safe.
Your second question, sir?
Thank you. Next question, yeah. You have applied for jobs with the City of Medford, Sparks, Nevada, and a county position with Linn County in Oregon. Why do you want to leave this town, and what have you done in Grants Pass that would highlight your resume? Means you wanted Medford city manager job, who has put in great public development, economic development, Rogue Retreat homeless complex, the $4 million Rogue X indoor recreational center, Lithia driveway fields when he served as parks director. Why do you feel you want to leave this town and can help somebody else? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your call, sir.
Yes. So from that perspective, I'd be more than happy to talk to you. I don't think that that's an online conversation that should or needs to be had. But if you'd like to call in to the city, I'd be more than happy to sit down and talk with you about your other questions you may have.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Let me see here. Okay. I'm doing some math in my head, so that means it's extremely difficult. My eyes are crossing, folks. I'm counting seconds here. But we have time. Brad, we've been talking about community development most of the program today. And we're short on time here, but what is your biggest challenge right now in terms, is it dealing with the housing situation and getting all of those permits and working on those public-private partnerships you talked about?
From my perspective, the challenges that Grants Pass is facing related to homelessness have a pretty direct link to economic development, and what are the creative ways that we and the private sector here can get our heads together and think about opportunities to have more job creation, understanding that not all the homeless population are going to be able to just tomorrow go and find a good job. But I think we can take the resources, the assets that we have, and create a culture, an ecosystem, if you will, local economy that will help us in that side. And because, until we get more people that are able to contribute, either through the local economy or, through purchase of houses or, through jobs. So that I think is it's a much bigger issue, obviously, than community development. But because we have housing and because we have economic development and building within our department, we feel like we're pretty well situated to kind of do some of that creative thinking.
All right. Well, and I've got one more question for you here, and it was something that I was asked about coming into the program, and it's kind of an aside, the old forestry complex located within the city of Grants Pass. I know there's been some talk about it. It hasn't been a front page news yet, but what is the situation there?
Yeah, it actually was front page news just a few days ago.
Golly, I must have missed it. I was busy listening to the radio.
Yeah, the property owner there has committed to keeping the old warehouse, which is the largest building on that property. They did indicate to the Historical Building and Sites Commission a couple of weeks ago that they, in order to build out the project that they have laid out for themselves, they would need to remove that that longer house that's along the one side. But so they're proceeding with plans to do some additional housing in the center of that property. They've already built out, I think, about 15 units on the I frontage and whatever that other street, J or K frontage. So the center of it, they have stated that they are, closer to having a plan, and they will retain that the warehouse, which is kind of the feature of that site.
That's a historical thing. There have been lots of talk about what to do with that for years, and trying to maintain that. Do we know what their plan is right now, other than just they're going to save it?
We do not. No, we know that they have been talking to a lot of folks and brainstorming, but at this point they don't have, to the city's knowledge, an actual land use for that.
All right. Thank you, Brad.
You bet.
All right. About 2 minutes, Mr. Kubik. What should people take away from today's program here?
Well,
and what do we expect from the city soon?
The takeaway from today's program is, as Brad's highlighted, we are at our best when we can work with community partners, whether it be addressing the unhoused situation that we have in the community, or it be housing needs, economic development needs. It is a public-private sector partnerships that make this community successful. So that also goes in line with information sharing. If you have questions, if you have concerns, if you have ideas for making our area better, or things that we are doing great that you'd like us to do more of, let us know. Contact any of us, myself or Brad or any of us at City Hall at 450-6000. We also have a Mayor Council email. You can reach out to Council and or us also on the web through email. But we are at the best when we hear from you. So please make sure to reach out to us so we can do our best to serve you.
My time is gone, gentlemen. I want to thank you very much for your time today. You're listening to KAJO Grants Pass.
Take control of your